Good afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Negler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Happy Monday. Hope you all had a great weekend. I know I did, especially watching the Brewers start their season with a sweep of the White Sox. I get it, it's just the White Sox, but feels a lot better doing that than the debacle that was the start of last season. And then, of course, the Packers making a few headlines earlier today with Matt LaFleur speaking to reporters at the NFC coaches breakfast down there at the league meetings in Phoenix, Arizona, and some quotes coming out from Brian Gutekunst this afternoon. Hopefully hear from Ed Policy at some point this week. I suspect probably late Tuesday or Wednesday, but LaFleur touching on a number of topics as we thought he might when we spoke on Friday. Of course, the biggest headline coming out of the session was his comments on players' roles, needing to do a better job of communicating with players about their roles, but then also those players needing to do a better job of, you know, staking claim to those roles and playing better, practicing better, etc. But that wasn't all that LaFleur talked about. He also did touch on a little bit about the departure of Rich Bisaccia, which still remains a bit of a mystery. Matt straight up indicated that, you know, he had expected Rich to return in 2026 and really didn't have a specific concrete reason for Bisaccia leaving other than to say he assumed he wanted to be closer to his family. So still a little mysterious there as far as a real straight up answer other than Bisaccia, whenever he may speak on it. I haven't seen any quotes from him since his departure, but like I said, Matt did touch on that and spoke about a few other things, the hiring of Jonathan Gannon. Clearly, the role as a head coach and his experience on the defensive side all kind of playing into why LaFleur went that route and being able to lean on him as a bit of a sounding board. Not unlike when Halfley came in. Of course, he didn't have head coaching experience in the NFL, but he had run a big program there at Boston College, had been a head coach. I do think LaFleur appreciates that and will be able to bounce some things off of Gannon while he's running his defense there in Green Bay. But like I said, the headline definitely about the players, the grades, the respect for players or lack thereof that was indicated in some of the NFLPA stuff that did come out a couple months ago. I think Matt's smart to get ahead of it because, again, this is something that's probably going to be talked about, referenced, etc., throughout at least the start of the season. Undoubtedly throughout training camp and the first kind of blush of the schedule, you got to think people are going to be watching. People are going to be looking to see what the kind of camaraderie is like, not just on the sidelines, but day in and day out there at 1265 Lombardi. Though, as I indicated earlier here on the channel, put up a quick video with some thoughts on the subject. I do think a lot of this work is clearly, obviously, going to be done behind closed doors. So it's not like we're going to be able to take the pulse, but some interesting times for Matt LaFleur, fresh off a contract extension, clearly the man in charge. So if you are a player, there is no question about where the buck stops. But I do think it's going to be fascinating to see how he handles some of this kind of tension, I guess, for lack of a better word, within the locker room in regards to the head coach. Now, you can dismiss it as maybe disgruntled ex-employees, and certainly there's little doubt that maybe guys like Quay Walker, Rashawn Gary, guys who are no longer in the locker room, may have been a bit of a driver here. But I also think there's a decent chance that there are still some holdovers and some guys who are probably coming off a season where they are disappointed in their usage and some of the things that they are hoping are handled a little differently by the coaching staff, which is something, again, that LaFleur touched on. So one of the biggest things that will undoubtedly shape the Packers 2026 season, especially early, something to watch for here as we go along with OTAs, minicamp, and then, of course, training camp there in late July. Hope you're all doing well. Good to see you all. Hope you're all, oh, yeah, look at these vibes in the comment section. So good to see everyone hanging out. Before we get to your questions and comments, you guys know I got to give a shout out to our friends over at ThetaCare. ThetaCare Cardiovascular Care proudly supports the community and Cheesehead TV. You've got a passion for football that never quits. And because you put your heart into everything, the experts at ThetaCare Cardiovascular Care put everything into yours. Stay game day ready with nationally recognized heart care right here at home. Cardiovascular care you can count on at ThetaCare, proud sponsor of Cheesehead TV. All right, folks, what's on your mind? How we doing? Oh, E4, what a start. Poor Duke. Can't imagine having a comfortable halftime lead and then losing. Hey, wait a second. I would be lying if I didn't say the thought did cross my mind. Duke having a Packers-esque meltdown there against UConn. Trying not to think about it, E4, but thanks for the reminder. Grumble, grumble. Joe, how you doing, sir? Was Matt LaFleur auditioning to be on Hard Knocks? Possibly. One of the 16 teams the NFL could compel to appear this summer. Stay tuned. Oh, Evil Badger, why? Why you got to put this in the ether? Replacement refs? Yes, something that is being talked about currently by the league in their continuing negotiations, or lack thereof, with the referees union. Yes, referees have a union. They are hiring or looking to hire officials to train in the potential development of a lockout and or inability to reach an agreement with the referees union. One of the things I know the spin and or talking points coming out of the league meetings are, well, the NFL is trying to get ahead of it this time. You know, they're going to hire some D1, D2, and D3 refs and train them up and give them support from New York, basically officiate a lot of these games from New York, being able to paper over the mistakes and correct the mistakes that are undoubtedly going to be made by the replacement refs. One of the rules proposals that they're going to be voting on this week is in regards to this exact idea. So yeah, replacement refs, is it a possibility? Right now, it feels like it's a very good possibility. Now, deadlines spur action, as Andrew Brandt is fond of saying, and there are a number of months to go before the rubber meets the road and they have to like pull the trigger on this idea. But the idea that the league is already putting it out there that, yep, we're going to train up some refs in the event, you know, the event that we can't get this sorted out, we're going to have replacement refs again and the games are going to go on. I don't know if you kids remember. I don't know if you're old enough to remember the debacle that was the Fail Mary, but those of us who lived through it never want to go through that again. And I understand, again, they're going to have safeguards by having New York be involved in every game, which, who's watching the games from New York? Who are making those decisions? It's going to be fascinating to watch play out. Here's hoping, for as frustrating as the officials can be at times, that they can get something done with the league and avoid all of this, because it will be a mess. No matter what the league does to try and smooth things out with replacement officials, I'm not going to say it's be an outright disaster, but it'll be close. It won't be pretty. I guarantee you that. What else we got here, folks? We got Soder. How you doing, buddy? Most unpacker press conference ever. After today, I think getting out of the gate fast has never been more important. That's interesting. I mean, the idea being, you know, you want to build some momentum and good feelings. I will say they got out of the gate fast last year, and that didn't seem to really catapult them anywhere. But I feel you, especially in regards to some of the thinking and feeling of the locker room in relation to the coaching staff and things of that nature. But man, you want to win, point blank, right? And winning early will certainly help build some confidence and hopefully a belief in what they're doing. But ultimately, what really matters, as we always say, and I know you know, Soder, what really matters is winning in, you know, through December into January. You want to be hot at the right time. I'd much rather be winning and forming great connections and communication, etc., halfway through the year into the playoffs, rather than coming out the gate smoking and then dying on the vine when things matter. That's just me. This is how I roll. Mike Witt, how you doing, brother? Hey, Nags, your most fun game you were ever at? Mine was, we want the ball and we're going to score. Funnest day ever. Lost my voice for 2 days after Al Harris's pick six. It's a very interesting question. The most fun I ever had, like pure joy, gotta be Favre's last game in a Vikings uniform at Lambeau. Desmond Bishop's pick six is about as kind of otherworldly as I've ever felt. watching the Packers play just because it was so cathartic, right? And here's the crazy part. It still came down to the wire. Like, Favre almost threw a winning touchdown pass to Randy Moss at the end of that game, which some people forget. But in that moment, when Dez Bishop pick-sixed him, it was all of those feelings you had and the frustrations and the anger and all of the drama that had gone on when Favre left and then came back and then wanted to stick it to Ted and all that stuff. It was like all of that just escaped your body. And the whole crowd was, the Lambeau just obviously exploded. And it was, again, it was just a cathartic feeling. So it was a party too afterwards, man. That was a good time to be at Lambeau Field. That was a lot of fun. I'm sure there are plenty of others in my history that I've seen, but that's the one that jumps out in the moment. Rich Harris says, I'm sure Golden, Reed, and Wicks all complained. I don't buy that. I'm sure Golden is on that list. Now, I would buy that Golden probably was not a fan of how he was utilized last year, but Reed and Wicks, Reed in particular, was hurt most of the year. What's he going to say? You didn't bring me off the sideline in my cast. I mean, I don't see Reed complaining. And Wicks, potentially, but again, he was sideline with a number of different injuries throughout the season. I think certainly there were times when maybe he would want to be on the field more and or get the ball more, but I have a hard time thinking it's either of those guys. Now, Golden, I'll buy Golden simply because, you know, you're coming out of college, you're hot shit, you get drafted in the first round, you tear up training camp. Everyone saw it. Like, you're ready to go. And then you spend the year running clear out routes and rarely having your number called. Like, I get it. That one I would understand and totally believe. Menace says, I think until GM and coach get on the same page, hockey line changes among the O-line and wide receiver stop, and Matt stops being so stubborn with things he sees on film not working. This is how it's going to be. It's a lot of ifs there, Menace. Yeah, I don't think the wide receiver thing is an issue. I really don't. I think certainly you want the most talented guys to play as much as possible. I think that's pretty easy. And you certainly like the idea of being able to target defenses different ways with different guys dependent on the matchups and what they present schematically. I think that all makes a ton of sense. I got no issues there. The O-line stuff, talked about that with Corey on Packer Transplants last week. That does feel like hubris. I'm not opposed to the idea of, okay, you got to straighten this out. Like, but I don't want the team, I don't want the Packers to overreact to one poor season. They've had a very good track record along the offensive line doing exactly this, right? The line shift, as you call it, which is a perfect description. I get what you're saying, but they've been pretty successful doing it. Now, maybe that's because they had guys like Elgton Jenkins and Zach Tom who could play all over the place. And maybe that got them a bit ahead of their skis, but until last year, it's been pretty good and productive, right? So again, I don't think overreacting is necessary, but certainly feels like maybe some guys need to be. And there, I'm glad you brought that up too, because that was one of the other things I was thinking, because everyone has jumped on, oh, it was obviously Golden, right? Complaining, or Elgton Jenkins, what have you, which Elgton Jenkins is a possibility, certainly, given the forcing him to play center, et cetera. But maybe it's like a guy like Anthony Belton, who, again, we've talked about it, like played tackle all summer and then was forced into the guard role when they moved Sean Ryan. Like there are possibilities there, you know, more so than the obvious ones, I think. What else we got here, folks? Oh, Funko, what's going on, man? Did you see all Bullard's comments on the Bears? Feels a lot more natural than Ben Fraud Johnson. I mean, yeah, he came out swinging in that piece over at Go Long. If you haven't checked it out, highly recommend you do so. Great stuff from Ty Dunn there with Javon Bullard. And yeah, Bullard went scorched earth on the Bears. Holy cow. Like, he ain't pulling no punches. And God bless it, man. The rivalry is back. I mean, in a good way, too, like both teams being talented, not liking each other is a hell of a lot more enjoyable as a Packers fan than, say, the 80s when the Bears just whooped up on us and you know, both head coaches hated each other, but the Bears were really good and the Packers sucked. Like, I much prefer this version. So, yeah, man, I'm down with it. I can't wait for that first Packers-Bears game. Although, you know, the NFL is going to put it in Chicago opening weekend, probably on Sunday night, before Micah Parsons and maybe Tucker Kraft, maybe Devontae Wyatt are even back. But bring it, baby. Bring it. I know Bullard's ready. Absolutely love it. So good. Ron, that's an excellent question. Who will be the backup quarterback with lots of question marks? I don't know. I know Brian was asked about the possibility of adding, what's his name? Kirk Cousins today. He was very diplomatic. I think that's a possibility. I suspect, though, they'll probably go young. I think they'll probably draft somebody on day three. They still have, you know, a few guys on the roster that maybe they bring into camp, but you know, it is March, what is it? March 30th. We got a long way to go before we need to truly worry about who the backup quarterback is. I mean, who do they play on Sunday? And by the way, if they did play on Sunday, Jordan Love will be starting. So you got some time to sort that out. Nothing too crazy yet. Moeklerpt. What a handle. Happy to catch you live. Go Pack Go from the Bay Area. What's up? How are you? Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate the support. Really, thank you so much. Nick D, how are you, brother? Tweet of the day, Tucker Kraft will beat up Colston Loveland. Love the internet. Had me cracking up. Dude, why are Bears fans obsessed with comparing the physiques of Packers players versus Bears players? It really feels like an issue. Like they got an issue down there in Chicago. I don't know. They've been so bad for so long that suddenly they got to grasp at every little straw. Possibly. But I did love Tucker Kraft being shown with a beer and a cigarette. Like, let's go. That's my dude right there. Come on now. I know who I'd put money on in a back alley brawl. I'll tell you that. Mike Witt, thanks again, brother. Golden had every right to complain. Complete coaching malpractice by not utilizing his playmaking ability until the playoff game. And then look what he does. Still so mad about Matt LaFleur's stubbornness. Mike, you know, and you and I often are at odds when it comes to our views on Matt LaFleur and sometimes the Packers. But in this instance, we are in a complete agreement. I think it is pure stubbornness that kept the ball out of Matthew Golden's hands throughout the majority of last year in favor of needing to get Romeo Doubs involved, or we got to get Bo Melton out there. That will never, ever, and I mean ever, make sense to me. And I do think, maybe short of malpractice, I do think it was a disservice to the Packers. I get anything and everything that he or his staff may talk about as far as guys earning opportunities and things of that nature. But it was so very clear from the jump that Matthew Golden is a talent and needs to have the ball in his hands. A concerted effort needs to be made to get him the ball. He is a potential playmaker, a potential big play waiting to happen with the ball in his hands. And to just completely almost ignore it for the majority of the season, I'll never get it. I will never, ever get it. And I get the idea of, oh, he was running the wrong routes. I mean, I think you saw that in the Dallas game. He plucks that big one early in the game when he's clearly in the wrong spot. Like, I get it. He's probably running some wrong routes. Randall Cobb ran the wrong route on his first touchdown pass ever from Aaron Rodgers. I want my talented guys on the field. They can make plays. And to ignore them to the extent that the Packers did last year with Golden, I'll never understand. Never, ever understand. What else we got here, folks? Matt says, why didn't Love look at him more? Was it the routes, number of routes he ran? He ran a ton of routes. He was on the field quite a bit. He ran a lot of clear out routes, though. I'll tell you that. Certainly didn't feel like, now only they can say for sure, right? But certainly didn't feel like he was a big part of the game plan or predominantly part of the initial reads. Like, I'm not saying read singular either, reads plural. like oftentimes, like he's on the backside or running a clear out or, you know, just not very involved. So only Love can say for sure, along with LaFleur, as far as what the game plan is, what the play call is, etc. But yeah, man, it's something that this season 1,000,000,000% needs to improve. Sigma, I feel for Duke fans after how our playoff game went. I don't. No fellow travelers here. You know, did Duke lose? That's a shame. That's a real shame. I mean, you know, it's just too bad they didn't have Coach K available to call in at halftime and whine about the officiating. We all know the Badgers were the true champs that year. We all know this. Let's remember this, all right? All right, buddy, I'm going to have to get going. I cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers each and every day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Please do me a monster favor and hit like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and then tell your friends and tell your family, Cheesehead TV, we are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. Go Pack, go.